Giant FM Real Radio, you're listening to A Trip with Penny Lane, and very excited to have in the studio Shelbyville's Mayor, Mr. Tom DeBond. Welcome.
Hey, Penny, does anyone ever say, and what a long, strange trip it's been?
Yes.
Okay, I was curious if you'd ever gotten that.
Well, it's probably, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not particularly unique or clever in
regards. So. Well, you know, not very many have said that. All right. You know, but I like that.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great.
It probably is a long, strange trip. So, you know, I asked you to come in, and today we're going to talk about the YMCA. And
sure.
One of my childhood memories is going to the YMCA day camp, which I wouldn't trade it in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, we had a great time with that. But the YMCA actually helped shape America. You know, I've been researching it online. They said it started in London in 1844, and the very first basketball games were brought to the masses with the YMCA in 1891.
Was James Naismith the inventor of basketball? Was he affiliated with the Y?
Yes.
I wasn't sure, so
like,
I was guessing.
Wow, yeah. That's what it says. James Naismith, the granddaddy of American basketball, was teaching physical education at the International YMCA Training School in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Wow, okay.
Wow, yeah. Tom, I'm impressed.
You know, I am a wealth of useless information, yeah. And at times when I do play Trivial Pursuit, I do okay, so... It's just I retain those crazy kooky things.
Yeah, it says he dreamed up a new indoor winter game using a soccer ball and two peach baskets.
Yeah, I knew that. The peach baskets, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. You're like literally reading it off the paper.
Oh, well,
from the other side.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't reading it off the paper, but it was like a wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, some people, you know, many people are very excited about the YMCA. Some are not as excited, you know.
It's tough. I mean, change is tough in any community, and last night was a very long city council meeting. But I think one of the things that really happened last night was that the city council did give everyone an opportunity to speak. You know, it wasn't rushed. There were no time limits set on the comments, as you've seen in so many meetings. We didn't do that last night. And, you know, not speaking so much to the messaging right now as much as the forum in which the media was or the meeting was held, everybody was given the opportunity to speak who wished to speak for or against. And I think Jack Horner was very open and forthcoming with his information and answered a lot of those questions. And it was nice, you know, to hear different viewpoints, which I think is important, no doubt about it. But I think the one thing that we heard last night that I expressed and several others was that we received a lot of positive comment before last night's meeting via social media, via emails, personal interactions, phone calls. And, you know, all the reports that we had looked at over the last several years, which mentioned a YMCA specifically, again, those reports were borne out by the public comment saying, we support this.
Why do you think people want a YMCA from the feedback that you've seen?
So if you look at the marketing study that was done by Foursquare back in 2017, you'll see that they did a pretty good job identifying the gaps. And warm water pool, indoor pool, was probably the number one gap they identified. And I've heard that's been the common theme that I've heard from several people, that it was a family opportunity. It was an opportunity to interact with your children during the winter, because it's an indoor pool and it's something this community doesn't have. And last night, Councilman Nolley, I thought, did a really good job explaining, because he's a former swim coach for over a decade, nearly two decades, and indicating, you know, look, the high school pool doesn't serve this need. It's not considered a warm water pool. We also heard that from Shelby Senior Services on a number of occasions. Mm-hmm. When we created Livable Communities Coalition and we started talking about accessibility and things like that, the thought of silver sneakers and water aerobics and things like that. And we'd asked the question whether or not the seniors could do those things in the high school pool. And we'd even entertained thoughts of maybe the middle school pool. But again, it came back, the water's too cold. And especially for the senior citizens, it's not comfortable. It's not therapeutic. It can be counterproductive in some cases. And so... that just wasn't an option. And so I think that was really just identifying the gaps in the community. I know that there were several concerns expressed about competition. And again, all I can do is go back to the needs analysis that was done by Foursquare that talks about the needs that were not being met.
Right.
And so I think that is, if you will, the sweet spot and where a YMCA can come in. But I think the other thing that's important also about last night's comments, there were a couple of comments made by people that indicated that, you know, hey, we're a poor community. We don't have the ability to sustain this based on the dues structure, things like that. But the whole point of the things that we're doing with the Y, with the downtown and other things, are to attract those higher income earners. We hear this constantly from local industry. None of our upper level or even mid-level management live in Shelbyville, Shelby County. The number of doctors who work at MHP who don't live in Shelbyville or Shelby County. And so what we're trying to do is create an environment to attract those people who already have a relationship here to be residents here.
Right.
And so for me, it's not a matter of what do we have today. It's a matter of what we're going to gain tomorrow. And so I hear the comment about we don't have the population to pay for these things. But my answer is, I don't know that I agree or disagree with you, but what I feel pretty confident is we're creating an environment where those high-income earners are going to come here.
Right.
You know, and it's the same with the housing proposal for downtown. There were a few people who said, who's going to buy a $300,000 house in Shelbyville? Go to Overlook and Trotter's Chase. There's no lots available. If you look at the housing studies, if you look at the comprehensive plan, public feedback, and all those things, again, it's not building or planning for today. And anyone who's been in comprehensive planning like I have for over two decades now knows you don't plan for today. You plan for 2, 5, 10, 20 years from now. And so I think, again, you've got to base a lot of these decisions on the context of the long game. You know, it's the old overused axiom. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon, right? So yes, I can meet an immediate need in some regards with a YMCA, with some of these other things, but I'm really meeting the need of the future for our community.
Mm-hmm. And if you have a $300,000 house down the street from you, that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, because it's going to add value to the neighborhood.
Right.
And we heard that from a gentleman last night. That was exactly his comment was, you know, we've got to think about what the impact is on the neighborhood. And his comment was, I know that these are going to increase my value of my property.
Mm-hmm.
That's a win for everybody, you know. And we had multiple proposals for that land. I know that there were some minor discussion on that last night. And we had maybe three different proposals for condos, apartments, townhomes. I mean, huge density on those properties. And we turned those away pretty quickly because we knew that didn't fit into the character of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Selfishly, it would have provided a huge mass of people that could support downtown business.
Right.
But it wasn't the right fit for the neighborhood. And we did get some neighborhood feedback. Councilman Carmody, who used to live just down the street from me, he and I, his brother Bob Carmody, we talked about these things. And they were very helpful in helping me pull together, you know, all the people that needed to be there to say, low density residential is probably what's best, and that's how we got to where we are today.
And to have that vision too is a great point. I can remember when we lived downtown Indianapolis, there are areas like right off the interstate where my husband's like, "Oh, we should buy all these little lots up," and they were terrible. You're like afraid to drive through them,
right?
And like today, you couldn't touch one of those pieces of property for probably $500,000.
So the best example I can give you of that, years ago, I used to go to the IU Cancer Center. I was a volunteer for the Lance Armstrong Foundation, and I used to do advocacy work for the National Breast Cancer Coalition and the Indianapolis chapter of the Young Survival Coalition. And so what we would do is go out to D.C. and lobby for funding. But our meetings were held at what's now the Simon Cancer Center up near IUPUI. And so a lot of times we would meet in the cancer center or wherever, and then we would go to lunch. There was a Qdoba. I love Qdoba. Mm-hmm. So we would go to Qdoba. But the neighborhood around Qdoba was pretty sketchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd go up there and you'd have lunch or dinner if it was late, and then you left. But me being me, you know, I would drive those neighborhoods because I was the planning director then and doing code enforcement and trying to get some ideas for revitalization. And I watched over a period of years those neighborhoods go from crime-ridden neighborhoods to some of the prime property in that pocket of neighborhoods, you know, and now it's the near north side where all those things are happening. And we've seen it over and over again now in Fountain Square and places like that. And those are the same kind of things that we're looking at as a model for what we're doing here and some of the other discussions we've been having for years.
Yes, because when you look in the town of Shelbyville, And, you know, because I live downtown. I grew up in Carmel.
You grew up in Carmel?
Yeah, I did. I graduated from there. Whoa. Right?
Yeah.
I know. It doesn't really seem
you
like
don't,
I did.
You don't see the stereotypical Greyhound to me.
No. No. In fact, I was just talking to my high school teacher today, you know, like my radio teacher and stuff. And so,
yeah.
So, a reunion for radio. That's where I started off was Carmel High School Radio, WHJE. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But, just like seeing like the difference of, I don't know, just looking. And there's one thing about Shelbyville I've always appreciated is the beautiful houses downtown.
Right.
I mean, it. You know, now look, I know you can find mansions in Carmel,
right.
But if you look in their downtown, they don't have the beautiful old houses like the big ones.
They
I'm
don't.
Talking about.
Well,
you
and
know,
they have a built downtown.
Right.
They didn't have a downtown.
No.
Fishers didn't have a downtown. They had to build it.
Right.
And that's one of those things that we've been talking about for years, too. And I tell you what, Doug Cassidy and I have been friends for years. And even in our friendship, we've not always agreed, but we've always respected each other. And that's one of the reasons I asked him to serve on the Plan Commission, because I know he's a big thinker, and he has diverse attitudes and experience. But one of the things that we talked about the downtown revitalization was necessary for is because we've got a great stock of buildings, but they're not going to stand there forever without attention. And so when you talk to the developers who say, look, I'm not going to spend a significant amount of money without some public participation, you know, meaning infrastructure and the downtown square and things like that, and you hear that repeatedly over and over and over again, you start to pay attention and you look at the examples from other communities where they've done that. So my point about Doug Cassidy is last night at the council meeting, he was the very last person who spoke on the record, and he stood up. And in his loud, booming voice, he said, borrow the money and do it. Just do it. And I thought, wow, that is really, that's powerful. It really was. And people talked about it first thing this morning.
I would think that that would be key, because how are you going to draw people to be here and make our community more unique? And boy, we've got just so many amazing assets in our area.
Yeah, we do. We have tremendous assets. The trails, obviously, I was on the trail Sunday. It was such a beautiful day, and I was on the trail Sunday, and I noticed we've been doing the invasive species clearing. Scott Gabbard with the Extension Office has helped us with that, and Karen's team has really done a great job. Where you can see the river, right? That was the whole point.
Nice.
See the river.
Right.
And so you can interact with that. We'll be doing a canoe launch point in Blue River Park this year, as well as the one in Morristown. So again, creating that water-based trail for canoe and kayaking.
That's nice.
And so we're actually with that, with the riverfront tap room, with the trailhead, and all these things that are now becoming interconnected. We're starting to really appreciate all of those things. I heard a funny story yesterday. Brandy Coombs, who's the director of Main Street, was at a meeting in Franklin. And Franklin is one of those communities that I hear, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Why can't we have the things Franklin has? Franklin spent all that money. Oh, don't you spend that money. You know, it's kind of a you can't have it if you don't spend it kind of thing. And Brandy said they were over there talking with their Main Street people about the things they'd done. And she said, out of the blue, somebody from Main Street goes, how did you guys get that beautiful sculpture done in your downtown? The people of Franklin would never spend that kind of money. And I thought, wow, that's really, again, it's all about perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, their perspective wasn't, hey, you've got a crummy downtown or you've got a great downtown or, you know, you really have potential. It was, how did you get that sculpture done with all of those groups contributing to the cause? And we would never get that done here. And I found that interesting, you know, whether or not you agree with the sculpture or not, or that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is, for Franklin, who we often point to as an example of what we can look at as success, they were pointing to us. And
that's
I think
great.
That's important.
That's nice. That's nice to hear that. And, you know, and just to look how Franklin developed over the years, I mean, we too can do that.
I was a student at Franklin in the 80s. So I went there in fall of 82, graduated in the summer of 86. Franklin was a nothing town, you know. I mean, my grandparents lived in Franklin, so I was over there my whole life. And up until, you know, the former mayor, McGinnis, and his predecessor before him, Mayor Paris, really decided, look, we're going to make a transformative change. Nothing was happening there. You know, I mean, you could go to Brown's Market, but you didn't go at night. If you were a college student, you definitely didn't go at night, because there was a literal divide between what they called townies and students.
Oh.
And so you were told at freshman orientation to not interact with, quote unquote, the townies.
Wow.
Now you go. Franklin has a thriving presence in the town. They've got, they had for a while there, a cafe that was a partnership with the city in City Hall. It didn't last, but it started other programs, you know. So even in failure, there's the lesson to learn. And we see that here as well, too. But Franklin had to spend significant public money to get there. And when I was talking to Mayor McGinnis, or former Mayor McGinnis, the number he used was over $22 million. You know, and that was just infrastructure. They put another $6 million in buildings for 50-50 match. So, I mean, Franklin was in for close to $30 million to revitalize their downtown. We're not asking for anywhere near that.
And it's baby steps to get to that big picture.
Exactly. But I think last night, and again, I go back to Doug's words, I go back to the emails we've received on the why and things like that. I think people are ready for this change finally to happen. And yes, it's taken a while to get here, but we had to do it thoughtfully, you know. And we've had missteps. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. No one is perfect, and I'll own every one of them.
And I think it's important, too, just because I do a lot of traveling a lot of times, that when you're driving down 74, it's real important to me, like when you look to the right and the left, that you're seeing something that makes you want to stop.
Right. No doubt about it. So we had a meeting last week with tourism, it was tourism, Councilman Ferris, and myself. And we were talking about the gateway features. 2 years ago, Councilman Ferris came to me and said, "Look, I was driving by Yorktown. I saw this really great sign. I'd like to do something with this." Tourism had approached me, Larry Lux, and said, "Hey, I see, you know, opportunities here to really dress up our front door." The comp plan talks about it. There were public input sessions talking about it. So I kind of told Councilman Ferris, you know, run with this, see where it goes. Mm-hmm. And so he did. He's been working with Matthias's landscaping here in town. Tourism, through Rachel Ackley and others, had been working with some folks as well. And last week they brought in some proposals. So now we're looking at these proposals. So again, you know, it's going to be a day or two before we get ready to do anything public. But there will be a public input session. And then we're going to start moving forward on those things as well. But it was a collaborative effort between tourism, the city council, you know, everybody was there.
And sometimes the crazier the better. I mean, when you think of Columbus.
Sometimes, but when you're spending public money, the crazier the better.
I know. But like when you go to Columbus, I mean, what do you think about when you're driving on that interstate? That bridge.
Yeah.
You know, and like Greenfield.
That bridge was supposed to play music too.
Was it really?
So when they first proposed that bridge, Mayor Stephen, Betsy Stephen was mayor then, and she came back from a meeting, a regional mayor's meeting, and they were talking about the bridge. And they had an artist who had figured out how to make that bridge play music, excuse me, based upon the speed of the vehicles.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think, and I can't swear to this because I don't know if that's documented anywhere, but I think she said it was going to play a Peter Gabriel song.
Oh.
Now, I don't know what song that could have been if you're a Peter Gabriel fan. I mean, there's a few out there, but I don't know what would have been.
I've seen it on the highways before where they'll like put, you know, when you go off the road a little
bit. Yeah.
Like they'll have it so the tread plays songs.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Yeah. So what were they going to play? Like you pull into Columbus off of 65, is going to play Shock the Monkey or Biko or, you know, what song was Columbus going to be known for?
But that makes people go that, you know, then you're, you know.
It's catchy, right? It catches people's attention.
No. And that's one thing that, you know, or to have a bridge or something that just pops, you know, it makes a difference of that infrastructure coming together.
Yeah.
So, well, I appreciate your time and always love having you on the show.
Well, that's fine. You know, I'm happy to be here. And, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't say that the Blue River Community Foundation hasn't been a great partner, too. And I was going to say that, but then, it just hit me that I didn't. As far as the sculpture, you know, the trailhead, obviously the trailhead. And you talked about unique things. The trailhead is the thing that I think the community should really be proud for, too.
It's nice.
It's not one of those things that we often talk about as our railroad heritage. But if you go to the Grover Museum and you look at the photographs, or even as you're walking into the streets of Old Shelby, you're passing through an old interurban car. And so you know, with the foundation's help and others, we were really able to capitalize on the design and the construction of that building, and it's fantastic.
I think it's fantastic too, and the trailhead is awesome. And I think too, for the parents out there, it's important, you know, to share the history and educate the children. You know, and yourself.
Yeah, agree. You know, you should never stop learning, right?
Right.
Right.
All right.
Exactly.
Mayor Tom DeVaughn, thanks for coming in and taking a trip with Penny Lane.
Happy to be here.